Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ladies, hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host, the star and namesake. That is Victor Davis Hanson. He is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution. And he's the Wayne and Marsha Busk Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor is everything: syndicated columnist, essayist, best-selling author, military historian, classicist, farmer. He's got a website, victorhanson.com. You should subscribe, and I'll tell you why later on. So much to talk about today. We're recording on Saturday the 9th. Do you know whose birthday it is today, by the way, Victor? The 9th of March? It's Amerigo Vespucci's.
It is.
And I'm just glad his parents named him Amerigo and not Leonard, because we'd be the United States of Lenny.
The original center, one that caused all that problem.
Yeah, was that
the map maker?
Yeah. Anyway, this particular podcast will be out on the 12th, Tuesday the 12th. So, Victor, I know you've done a few podcasts the last 2 days with Sammy, but this will be the first opportunity for our listeners on this show to get your thoughts on Joe Biden's very yelling State of the Union, and we will get your thoughts on that, Victor, right after these important messages.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So Victor, he gave this speech. There was a lot of theater there and a lot of yelling, intimidation. What are your various thoughts on the various aspects of this?
Well, I think that they bedded him down all day like they did before the first and second debates in 2020. And they gave him something like Adderall and they told him, scream and yell and be vibrant. And even then he slurred words. He did some really terrible things, calling this poor woman Lincoln. But anyway, that was the idea. It was Phantom of the Opera. Remember the Phantom of the Opera, semi-fascist, ultra-mega speech with the red satanic colors a couple years ago? Well, this was 2.0, only it was the State of the Union. You're supposed to unify people and talk about a positive agenda. Instead, it was my predecessor. So it was a kingdom of lies. So he lied about the border and said he didn't have the legislation or the money, and the Republicans denied him that when Mayorkas is on tape in 2021 bragging, Jack, that we got rid of catch and release. We got back to catch and release. We got rid of refugee status in a foreign country. we are not pressuring Mexico to patrol the border. We stopped the wall. He was bragging about it. And of course, Biden said everybody should surge when he was running as a candidate in 2019. So they know what they did. The only reason they're acting this way on the border is because it's become a campaign issue to their surprise. But they feel they've won the issue anyway because they've let in 8 to 10 million people. So that was a lie. He said that he had cut the deficit. The deficit, when he came in, it was, 26. The first year it went up to 28. It's at 35. And he is increasing the deficit every 100 days by $1 trillion. Yeah. If he gets reelected, he will add $22 trillion himself to the deficit. And then, so he went on that. And then I've never seen a president attack personally, turn to the Supreme Court justices assembled and talk to them and warn them, threaten them. It was like Chuck Schumer outside the Supreme Court when he said, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you reap the wind. You sowed the wind. You're going to reap the whirlwind. You won't know what hit you. He said, you don't know the, he said, called it electrical power. You didn't know the electrical power. And he said, electoral power of women. Now, what is that supposed to mean? I don't know. And then he got in that one off with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And he thought he was going to outsmart everybody. He thought, somebody's going to yell her name. So I'm going to bring out a little medallion or a little, I don't know what that thing was. He pulled up. And he was going to look at it. And of course, he couldn't even read it right. So it was a mean-spirited speech. It was full of lies. The next day, the Adderall wore off. And so he had to go up and make a speech. He got back onto the campaign. I don't know what it was, campaign trail. He went to campaign in Pennsylvania because remember he said that he was told Biden from Scranton. And right. What did he do? The first thing he did, he said, Pennsylvania, I have a message for you. Send me to Congress. I thought, wrong state. You already have been in Congress. And then he said, the U.S. Capitol, the same building where our freedoms came under assault on July the 6th. No, if you're right that it was assault, it was January the 6th, and I think you may be confusing July the 4th, and that's a Freudian slip to suggest that maybe you think deep down in your black heart that these people were July 4th patriots. So, and then I couldn't believe this one. He said, Biden, he always tells the stories that he always says to, no kidding, real thing. Foreign leaders come up to me and say, you got to win again. So he did that. He did his little whisper thing and he said, every world leader has grabbed my arm. They pulled me aside and said, you can't win again. You cannot win again, Joe. And then finally, we've added more to the national debt than any president in the history of all, term in all of the history. That might be true of 4 years. So I don't know what the, they can't just do this where they have him work 3 days, put him in a Barca lounger, give him an IV of vitamins or something, and then give him some attention deficit disorder, amphetamine, and then have him go completely stark raving animated. I mean, he could not settle down. He was just screaming and yelling. His face, he does look reptilian. He had no color in it. And he has that, all those years of Botox. Have you noticed they've kind of made like a Skeletor face?
It's a taut.
It doesn't have any elasticity. And he just, he grimaces. And everybody came up, get off my grass, old man, angry. And then, of course, the left loved it because he wasn't dead. He was not a nerd. He was animated. So they didn't mind the lies. I don't know where the Washington Post, remember that fact checker, 452 lies of Donald Trump. And, it's the border was a lie. The inflation was a lie. Inflation's gone down under my term. No, it's gone up 17% in staples such as food and shelter and fuel and interest rates.
Yeah.
Victor, 30%.
I'm at my mom's. I had to go out and get her, get her some food. And I bought a little packet of blueberries. $10 at a supermarket here in the Bronx. I'm shocked by how
I know, and
I'm always shocked every time I go buy something. Like, holy crap, this breakfast I just bought cost me $14.
I feel bad because I've got these four voracious Queenslands and they look at me like, do we get to have some canned food once? And I go to the store and it was 83 cents a can because I buy it by the case. Yeah. And now it is $2.99 and for the same thing. So
yeah.
I split it with four of them and they're going, oh, wow, this is shrunk, Vic. Shrinkage.
Confide some rats in the barn.
I have also noticed that when I open the can, maybe Joe Biden's right. Instead of that stew beef, yeah. Right at the top, it's down about an inch and a half. So they're giving a little bit less. And that's what he wanted to talk about, chips that were shrinking. This man took the Middle East, and Jake Sullivan, his national security advisor, said, it's kind of my quietest portfolio. And he blew it up. And now he's going to put a portable port, maybe a Mulberry from D-Day style, and dock it off Gaza and then just do a Kabul where our Marines are in danger by handing out free stuff.
Yeah.
To the people who on October 7th raped and mutilated. Some of you say, well, they didn't do it, Victor. They're different than Hamas. No, 500 of them went in and they celebrated in the streets and they spit and desecrated the corpses. And they knew damn well that their hospitals, their mosques, and their schools were right on top of 300 miles of. How can anybody say, we're refugees, we don't get any money? And oh my God, there's a German earth moving equipment right there. Where did that come from? Where did that Mercedes tunnel bore come from?
Right.
Wow, my cousin goes on down a ladder and he comes back a month later. What's going on? I had no idea. I'm sorry, it just doesn't go. It doesn't fly.
Victor, I want to talk a little more with you about the port in Gaza and also some open mic diplomacy. But first, my friend, I have a word for you, and it's barbecue. And just hearing that word makes your mouth water. You may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg, or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, who has that kind of time? You, friends, need a hot, fast, Solair infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solair is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solair infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we thank the good people from Solair Infrared Gas Grills for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, two other things about the port and also about the State of the Union. The one report has that this is going to take 2 months to build, 1,000 troops, putting them in harm's way, which you touched on. But also, Victor, there are still six Americans. We don't even know their names. They're like forgotten.
No, I don't. We don't
we have six
alive.
Hostages there.
If they're alive.
Yeah, this is
he gave Iran $1 billion per hostage. Well, sorry, $1.2 billion to get back six. But he doesn't even care about these people. We don't even know their names. We don't know whether they're alive or not. And it's so absurd because we are dealing now with a thuggish cabal that went in and mutilated and raped and decapitated at a ceasefire. And we're calling for a ceasefire. We had a ceasefire Hamas broke it. And then they went in day after day after day and launched 7,000 rockets. No leaflets, no text messages to Israeli high-rises. Get out, please. We respect them. And then they put all of their vulnerable people in surrounded likely targets. So they were willing, much more willing to have Gazans killed than Israelis were. They didn't care. And we're dealing with these people. They took 250. They're hostage takers. And we're dealing with them. We shouldn't give them a damn penny, and we should not deal with them. We should not deal with them. This administration, if you collate what that State of the Union he gave, like on the one hand, October 7th was, you know, bad, and then it was damn Israel. And
well, that's the other. Go ahead.
Yeah. All he has to, if you think all you people who are angry at me who just listen to this, okay, all I'm asking is you just do the same thing with Ukraine. And I support giving Ukraine some weapons to defend itself. You tell Mr. Zelensky, Mr. Netanyahu has to have an opposition government. You do too. Don't cancel right. elections. Don't suspend habeas corpus. We're calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Well, that will reward the aggressors. Well, we're going to call one for Ukraine too. Well, that will reward the Russians. I don't care. We got to be symmetrical. And then right. you say to them, when you send your HIMARS, not in our name, when that rocket hits a bridge in occupied Donbass, you better drop leaflets and text civilians that get out of the way. Oh, by the way, we do not want you to be disproportionate. When you go back and fight at those Russians, against those Russians, you be measured. You got to be proportionate. And oh, by the way, the Russian people are not Putin. They're separate. Just like Hamas is separate from Gaza, do not punish the Russian people. Do not attack targets where they may be injured, even in the Donbass and Crimea. They are separate. Try that and see what happens. They're not. They have a special set of rules. They have a soft spot for Hamas or the people who support Hamas.
Yeah, I won't use the word hard here for Netanyahu, and that I'd love to get your thoughts on another example of open mic diplomacy, and we'll get to that, Victor, right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way. Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show, recording on Saturday, March 9th. This episode will be up on, I wrote it down somewhere. Here we go. Tuesday, March 12th. Victor, Joe Biden, are we in the third term of the Obama presidency? So Obama famously with his open mic with the Russian president several years back. And now we have Joe Biden talking to Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, and Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, telling them that, you know, he was telling Netanyahu that he had to come to Jesus, which, of course, is just another example of ham-handed language use by this administration. Remember, a few weeks ago, we talked about the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Using the term final solution. And here you have Biden talking about Jewish leaders with come to Jesus. Anyway, Victor, any thoughts about this open mic diplomacy?
Well, he didn't apologize when he was called on it. He said, good. He said he didn't apologize. So he hates Netanyahu, and he hates Netanyahu because Netanyahu doesn't, you know, bend the knee to him. And he knows what Netanyahu is. He's a free market Republican-like conservative. So in his world, he's MAGA. He should go walk around Israel and go say 2003, 2004, 2005, and come back now and look at it. The high rises, the cranes, the complete frenzy of construction, the beautiful ports, the infrastructure, the new freeways. That was partly or mostly Netanyahu's achievement when he was Sharon's economic head. And he opened up all of the free markets and got rid of all the socialist restrictions on economic activity. And Biden doesn't like that either. And so Biden knows that no one likes him, and he feels that he has this attitude toward what he calls minorities of, you ain't black, meaning you ain't Arab unless you vote for me. You ain't Latino unless you vote for me. That's his idea. It's very condescending. So he is shocked that I do think the Arab Muslim population will vote for him no matter what. But right now they're playing a coy game where they're not going to vote for him, and he's willing to do anything. And that means make all hot mics are valuable because they really show you what's going on. So when we saw Obama's, we forget that the subtext of that hot mic was it was absolutely carried out, the quid pro quo. Obama did dismantle missile defense, which would come in very handy right now in that war. And yes, Putin did give Obama space, i.e. he did not go into Donbass or Crimea during what Obama said in the hot mic during my last election. And then once Barack got rid of valuable missile defense, sold out the checks on the polls, once he beat Mitt Romney, got reelected, then Vladimir said, okay, the deal's over, now I'm going in, and the deal was kept. Obama didn't do anything. That's what was a real crime, and nobody, and all these people, you remember the media, I remember Snopes and PolyFact and all these, oh, that's not true, and all. It was true. And this is the other big lie. It gets back to the speech when he kept talking about Ukraine, and our president said this about our own soldiers. I thought, okay, George W. Bush, Putin crossed international borders and went into Georgia over a station. Okay, let's go to Barack Obama, invaded the Donbass of Crimea. Oh, Trump. Oh, what happened? Nothing happened. Oh, Joe Biden. He went right back in. So three out of the last four administrations, there's a reason why he went in, and there is a reason why he didn't go in and won, and Biden couldn't admit that at all. Biden couldn't say, well, it's been really tough dealing with Ukraine. You see, I pulled out of Afghanistan and I left $50 to $60 billion and 20,000 of our contractors there. And, you know, I didn't mean to, but I left a $1 billion embassy we just refashioned. And that wasn't the worst of it. I left the biggest U.S. airbase in Central Asia. And we put $300 million in Bagram. And then, you know, I had my pride flags at the embassy. I had my George Floyd mural, and we just skedaddled. Now we got our hair mussed up because we lost 13 Marines. And then we blew up a family. Mark Milley said it was a righteous kill, but, you know, things happen. And then there was that Chinese balloon. We didn't shoot it down as it traversed lazily over the United States continental mass, taking pictures of our bases. And I did say that I told Putin, I was pretty tough with him. I said, if you're going to hack, please don't hack hospitals. If you're going to hack Americans, be careful of what you choose. You can hack this, but not that. And then I also said, you know, if you're going to go in, it depends on whether it's a minor or a major offensive, whether we react. And Mr. Putin, remember, when I came in, I froze Donald Trump's $100 million in military assistance to Ukraine. Once I saw you massing, that was a signal. I wasn't going to do anything. So you were supposed to back off. And then when you did go in, I did my part. I said to Zelensky, get out of there. I'll get you a plane and get out. So he didn't mention any of that in the speech. And he blamed the one person that Putin was afraid of going into anywhere. And he couldn't even name Trump's name. I've never seen a State of the Union like that. Have you noticed he as I said, he only gets animated about half the country. He snaps out of that reptilian lethargy only when he thinks of Trump and the people around Trump. You guys are MAGA people listening. He hates you. So he hates you more than he hates the Houthis. He doesn't speak this way. He doesn't say, "Oh, the Houthis are hitting or killing America." Never. He doesn't say the Chinese, "Oh, they're infiltrating our technology. They're doing this. They're threatening Taiwan." No. He doesn't say even about Putin. "Well, he's like, ah, ah, ah." No, he doesn't. Nor Iran. He only gets animated with that face tightening and that anger and that hatred in his eyes when he talks about half the country. Yeah. And it's really disgusting. And he's turned the State of the Union into a crass campaign rant. And I don't know if that's the hallmark of future State of the Unions. If it is, we should just stop them. That doesn't say we have to have them in the Constitution.
No, they,
from time to time, the president shall consult. He should just send a long tweet.
Someone will send us a comment, but it was many a president who just sent a letter up to a document up to Capitol Hill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Should do that again. It's just it's a farce. And he abused that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to write an article today about the left-wing effort to destroy democracy. Because when you're a president and your Senate majority leader in the past has threatened Supreme Court justices by name, and now you basically threaten them during the State of the Union address, and you know it is a felony to go to a Supreme Court person's house and protest and scream and threaten them, and you didn't do anything.
Right.
And then you attack them personally, and then you want to get rid of the Electoral College and the filibuster and pack the court and let in new states and get your opponent's name off the ballot. And then you see that we see this cross-fertilization that the Fannie Willis team was in the White House being counseled. And there's some suggestion that Jack Smith, it was in consultation. And there's a suggestion that Lita James, all of these prosecutors were getting their cue from the Biden White House. And he said to many aides, why hasn't the special prosecutor indicted him? That is a systematic, cohesive assault on democracy. We've never seen anything like it. And believe me, if you did the same thing right now, if Donald Trump is president and he's being challenged by Joe Biden, and he sends the FBI to go to Twitter, Elon Musk Twitter, and say, "We want to work with you to suppress any information that's harmful for Donald Trump." And he's going to get an attorney general to coordinate with local prosecutors. And Joe Biden is going to find himself facing a 30-year statute of limitations window that's been waived so that Tara Reid can come forward and say that she was sexually assaulted. And then when he denies it, file a defamation suit.
Right.
And then we're going to get local prosecutors trying to get him off the ballot. And then as soon as the Republicans take the House, they junk completely the filibuster. And what would they say? They would go nuts.
Yeah.
Maybe it takes that. Maybe it takes a little bit of tit for tat to remind the left what they're doing. This is the most revolutionary movement in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Everything is fluid. Nothing is concrete. Everything's up for grab. Voting, FBI, CIA. Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, calls his Chinese counterpart, warns him about his own president. Whose side are you on?
Right.
Oh, gosh.
You know, intimidate a Supreme Court justice at their home and nothing happens. Pray outside an abortion clinic and the FBI is kicking your door in. It's at the direction of the attorney general. It's terrible times. Victor, I want to stick on the State of the Union because there are a couple of other aspects, including the Lake and Riley episode, but I hate to call it an episode. But first, I want to let our listeners know that our God-given freedoms are facing unrelenting attacks, as you just yourself pointed out, Victor. It's a battle for truth, and the only way we're going to win is if we stand together. And thankfully, Alliance Defending Freedom has been defending our rights for 30 years and winning. Right now, they're involved in two critical cases before the Supreme Court. They're suing the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls. And in the second case, they're assisting the state of Idaho to defend its law protecting the lives of women and their unborn children against the Biden administration's attempt to override the law and force doctors to perform abortions. Yes, force doctors. Now, they need your help. With your best gift, you courageously join ADF in fighting critical Supreme Court cases against government lawlessness and help defend our cherished freedoms. Go to joinadf.org/Victor. That's joinadf.org/Victor to give now. With your help, I've pledged to raise $5,000 by March 31st for ADF. Visit joinadf.org/Victor to make your best gift right now. I know with your help, we can beat that goal and help make a generational difference for freedom. And we thank the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is just a terrific, terrific and important consequential organization. We thank them for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So Victor, yeah, Lincoln Riley, however Joe Biden talked about her, came up during the debate, the State of the Union speech. And one thing got me, Victor, when he responded to the taunts of, oh my gosh, I'm going blank on her name, the congresswoman from Georgia.
Oh.
Sorry. We all know who, Marjorie Taylor Greene, where Biden said immediately, you know, he talked about the kill by illegal, which he's gotten in trouble from some people in his on the left. As a parent who has lost a child, I understand. And you know, there's this thing like the
Wait. He said, as a parent who has lost children.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was because I give him credit. He lost his young daughter. I mean, he was referring to, and I had empathy for him. He lost his daughter in the, if you remember the crash and then Bo. So he did lose two children.
But it seems to me, again, that at that a moment like that, he's not trying to say really to the family of Lake and Riley, I feel your pain. It's to inject his ownness into their grief.
He always does that. He always does that. He always tries to one-up people. If he's talking to the Gold Star parents of people who've died in combat zone, then Bo comes up as a hero that died in Iraq. We lost Bo. Literally, he said this, we lost Bo in Iraq. We lost him at Walter Reed from a brain tumor, you know, under peaceful conditions. But he always does that. And Lincoln Riley's mother got very angry today and said that she resented the fact that he brought his daughter up and couldn't even remember her name.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some really devastating. I have never seen the Republicans. They haven't made a good campaign commercial since the George H.W. Campaign. Remember that? That was pretty good. And they had the Boston Harbor pollution commercial. They had the Dukakis tank commercial.
I remember you, the song. Yeah. Comparing to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. And then you remember the Willie Horton revolving door commercial. And that was the last time that they were willing to do that. And so this time I've been watching these commercials, and man, they are the most devastating commercials I've ever seen Republicans put. They show they're about Lincoln Riley and about the guy. They show his picture, his tattoos, all the time he was let out of prison or let out in the United States, let go. And then it's interspiced with quotes from Joe Biden. Would you arrest an illegal? No. Would you go after sanctuary? No. And it's all about that. And then the sheer callousness. Nancy Pelosi was not worried about the fate of Lincoln Riley. She was worried that Joe Biden said the word illegal. It was just a travesty. And then that creepy gangbanger, and apparently he and his brothers were in one of the most violent gangs there was in Venezuela. That's just more proof that what Trump said was true. They're just emptying the jails, which the left got really mad about. But he apparently disfigured the poor woman's head. He bashed it in and deliberately tried to I just can't imagine what it would be like the last seconds of her fighting for her life. God.
Yeah.
And well, something's wrong with that city, because there was not too long ago, there was somebody from Fresno whose daughter was at the University of Georgia and was killed in a hit and run, DUI hit and run. And they, of course, the DUI person fled the scene. And that's when people flee the scene of an accident, and the driver is Hispanic, as this one was, you usually get the impression that they're here illegally because they do not want to be apprehended. Of course, the therapeutic response to this, well, they wouldn't flee the scene of the accident if you'd give them a semi-driver's license. No, they still do. So I'm just, if I sound bitter, it's because on five occasions, people have done that to me.
Right.
They actually, five occasions, they ran into orchards or vineyards, destroyed anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 of infrastructure, left the car. I ran out when I heard the boom. Whiskey or beer bottles in the car, seeing the guy run away, called the highway patrol, who came out in really nice clothes and said they were not going to go into that messy, dirty vineyard because he was hiding. And the tow truck would be out quick to take in the car and impound it. And I couldn't touch it. And one time they didn't say that. So I dragged it with a tractor, chained it up to a big walnut tree. And then the next thing I knew, the person who did the damage came out with the highway patrol. Can you imagine that?
Dang.
Demanding that I unlock and give back his car. The other time I was with my youngest daughter driving, and someone ran a stop sign in my hometown. Yeah. And I was in a pickup, thank God. And he hit us, T-boned us, with a Honda Civic, and those old Civics that just had kind of a hatchback with two seats. And he hit us very hard, and it knocked our car into the other lane. Nothing happened to us. We were a little shaken up. My daughter was 14, and he took off running.
And never to be seen again?
No, as Reverend Wright said. No. I chased him, and I captured him. He had a really bad limp. And I grabbed him, and the local police came, and they, first of all, a policeman who tried to say that it was my fault for not anticipating that he would run the stop sign.
Oh my God.
But I pointed out, and then the other policeman came and corrected him. And then they told me after an hour, my daughter was traumatized, crying, that it was okay for us to go, and they would handle it. And I said, well, when can I get the police report? Because I have some damage to my car. Oh, don't worry. So the next day, I called my insurance company. They called me back and said, get the police report. I went to the police station. They said, yeah, we'll get it. So I said, okay. Went back and I said, they don't have it. Can you call them? He said, yes, but Mr. Hansen, I want to say that your police department has a very bad record of not reporting all the accidents that entail people here who are not legal. So I went back the next day and said, I don't think you got in an accident. We don't have any record of it. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I know that I have the guy's badge number. And he said, well, I reported it, you know, and that was it. And so I had to contest to the insurance company that I didn't do it myself. There was no record of it.
Wow.
And that had been.
I hope you at least punched the guy when you caught him, but.
I could. You know why I didn't? He almost killed my daughter because she was on that side that he hit. He was about 5'3". He was about 60 years old. He was completely drunk and he got hurt. He was limping. I caught him. I was about 40 at the time. And I grabbed him by the neck. And then I walked him over to the police came. I called 911 before I went after him. He was about 400 yards ahead of me. His car had the fender was crashed into the wheel. It was screeching really loud. He pulled over by a pipeline company, and I ran up and got him. And then I walked him back, and
Mad Max Selma. Damn.
Well, I know. They advised me not to do it. So when all I get, what I'm saying is I get really angry when I hear this, that don't use the word illegal. And when people die, and my best friend that I went to kindergarten, I won't mention his name because I don't want to bring any sadness to his family. My best friend from kindergarten, K through 12, went to a community college, Reedley Community College, and he was driving down Lackjack Avenue in 1972. An illegal alien hit him, T-boned him in a very rural, isolated intersection, and knocked him three vineyard rows in. So he was almost hidden. And that person apparently knew what he had done and left. And no one found him for 12 hours. And he had severed an artery and bled to death. He could have been saved. So I am very, I have no tolerance for illegal alien hit and run. I've seen so much of it in my life. I could go on and on and on about members of my family and friends that have been hit at blind intersections in rural Fresno County in which the driver took off.
Well, Victor, if we can still stick to the State of the Union, I have two things. First will be RFK. Did you see his response? I know people are here to listen to your views, but I assume a lot of people did not see it. But I watched it, and I thought, you're trying to put myself in the shoes of somebody who is not thrilled about either Trump or Biden. And there's a lot of Americans out there who I think are in that category. And that Kennedy's talk came across, you know, wasn't yelling. It seemed quite patriotic in
it. No, it was very good. As long as you remember that he is a liberal. He's not a conservative.
Yeah. Right. So absolutely.
But he's a very strong Catholic. So on issues like abortion, he's good. He's good on the border. He was the one, or his brother, or he both were trying to buy oil from Venezuela at one time from Chavez.
I think it was his brother, the congressman.
Yeah. So anyway, he was pretty good. And I think he's got a very good strategy. It is, I'm going to resurrect JFK's Democratic philosophy. And that's what would win elections. And it probably would. But, when I wrote The Dying Citizen, I spent a day reading the speeches at the 92 and 96 Democratic convention by Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown and Hillary Clinton. Not Jerry Brown, one other person. Dianne Feinstein, I think. They were far stronger on immigration than Republican rhinos were. I mean, they said it's illegal. There's nothing to know about it. You've got to shut the border. It was all pro-union. We're not going to let people in and destroy wages. So what happened? Barack Obama's what happened. That was the turning point. When we talk about decline of America, you know, we use that Hemingway phrase, gradually, then suddenly.
Right.
There were gradual precursors. And one of them was the Obama administration on matters of climate change, race, open borders. He set the ball rolling, you can argue. And then the sudden thing that destroyed the country were fourfold. And the first was the COVID lockdown. I mean, that COVID lockdown just made paranoia, isolated people from human action, you name it. It just empowered Zoom and Google and Facebook as our avenues of information. The second, of course, was George Floyd. We let all these crazy people out. All of us were crazy being locked up. And then all of a sudden, George Floyd, an 8-time felon, high on fentanyl, trying to pass counterfeit checks, resisting arrest. It was unfortunate what happened to him. But next thing we knew, he had halos and angel wings on murals. And then we were off to town with BLM and the woke DEI and the present madness. And then we had the Donald Trump 2020 election, where everybody went insane. We changed the way we balloted. We changed, all of a sudden, it was $3 billion were poured into the election via Molly Ball's account in Time magazine. And so we had all of these things that that made us sort of wake up and think we were Kafkian insects or something. We don't feel like we're in this country. But it was very sudden. There were gradual indicators, but it was very sudden. Without that lockdown, without the George Floyd incident, without the Trump derangement syndrome, I think we might have been a very different country right now.
Yeah, and different world too.
Yeah.
No Afghanistan, no war in Russia, no Middle East madness. Yeah. No, hey, Victor, yeah, there's another interesting item about still relates to the State of the Union. That's from some piece up on Powerline, and I'd like to get your thoughts on that when we come back from these important messages. We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Again, Victor and I are talking on Saturday, the 9th of March. This episode is out on the 12th. We're 2 days out from the State of the Union speech, and this is Victor's first opportunity to address it from all angles. So, Victor, somebody who did address it from a really interesting angle was Lloyd Billingsley at Powerline, which I know is the website you turn to first in the morning. And the piece was titled Casa Biden. And it was interesting that Casablanca, the great movie, was playing on Turner Classic Movie at the very same time that Biden was hollering at the nation on Thursday. And here's what he wrote. And bear with me, dear listeners. He writes, back in 1940, the French World War I veteran, this is Pétain, Marshal Pétain, already in his 80s, struck an armistice with the German National Socialist invaders, then in alliance with Stalin's Soviet Union. The Nazis made Pétain head of their puppet government in Vichy, allowing him to govern parts of France under their supervision. Casablanca shows a mural of Pétain with his famous slogan, Je tiens mes promesses, même celles des autres, pardon my accent. I keep my promises, even those of others. That's Joe Biden all over. This is the point Billingsley is making. The Delaware Democrat is the puppet of a globalist, leftist, woke axis, and their every wish is Biden's command, as he showed in his September 1st, 2022 speech, like something staged by Leni Riefenstahl. Biden regards those who want the nation to be great as the enemy. Exactly what you were talking about before, Victor. And he goes on. It's a really, really interesting.
He's a very good writer. I think he's my age, but he's a student of the 60s Cultural Revolution. He was very close. Do you remember they had a magazine, a print magazine called Heterodoxy?
Yeah.
In the 80s, and it just said things that you couldn't say at that time, that the Black Panthers were a toxic organization, and et cetera, et cetera. He and Peter Collier and David Horowitz were very prominent, and that's where he had some really good things. And of course, his point, as I remember in that article, was that this is no accident, that Joe Biden deliberately, knowingly opened the border, and he did so to get followers who would be able to vote under the new post-COVID protocol. And he had that quote, I think he quoted, didn't he have that Biden quote where Biden, you know, Biden always does this. He gives what he's really thinking away, and he calls it a blunder when Biden said, nobody has done more to further voter fraud than I have. Yeah, he said that at one time. And I think I think this is one thing the Republicans make a mistake. They get mad at Mayorkas, they impeach him after two times, twice, and they say, oh, this is incompetent. No, it's not incompetent. This was Machiavellian brilliant. They came in and they overturned those executive orders, over 100 of them, for one expressed purpose. They wanted 8 to 10 million people to come into the United States under the new protocols that had happened in 2020 in the swing states, in which you could vote by an automatically mailed registration. Give your address to a state agency. Go in to get welfare, go to the emergency room, apply for disability, you name it, and they will get, just give them any address. There'll be no certification, authentication. You will get a mail-in ballot. Then you fill it out. Maybe a third-party harvester will come to your house to ensure that you do. You mail it in. And there's, and the rejection rate will be about 0.3 of all ballots. And 70% of the ballots that will be counted will be not cast on election day. That's what they gave us. And now this 8 to 10 million people follow, and that's the purpose. They look at it and they get in their little Democratic back rooms and they say, wow, we flipped California. No more Ronald Reagan, the George Dickmajian, Pete Wilson. We're not even going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh, we flipped Colorado. No more split.
And Bill Armstrong, right?
Yeah, no, we flipped Nevada. It's gone. We're going to flip Arizona. We did in the last election. We'll do it permanently. And then we're on to Texas and Georgia. That's how they think. And they're pretty successful at it. And it's kind of Romneyism, McCainism, just to say, well, you know, they're kind of incompetent. They're squishy therapeutic. No, they're not. They're hardcore Jacobins.
Yeah.
They're the most disciplined revolutionaries we've faced. And this was all by intent. They destroyed the wall in the sense that they just stopped it inert. They left the panels rusting in the sand. They told the Mexican government, do not guard the border, help people come in. They said, surge the border, no catch, that whole protocol. So when Victor, this is all over, they're not going to say, oh, we lost because, if he loses, he's not going to say, well, we lost because we lost control of the border. He said, he's going to say this, well, we lost, but we won because we got in 8 to 10 million people, top that, ha ha. That's the attitude that left's going to have.
Well, Marshall Petain, I will say it for the comparison that Billingsley made to Biden, which I think is more about geriatric fools than it is anything else. At least Petain was won a war one time before he became.
Yes, he was
a jerk.
They shall not pass at Verdun. He was the hero. And then, of course, he was, I don't know what you would call him, a Catholic right-wing monarchist during the 20s and the 30s. And he wasn't
Was he a great general? He
was in World War I.
He
had a great moment. Folk was the best of all of them. He was, I mean, he had his ups and downs. He was the best. But Petain, he came in from the lower ranks. He was a meteoric rise. And he was associated with Verdun, and he handled the mutiny very well. Okay. In any case, he was in his 80s, and he wasn't responsible for the loss. So they brought him in, and the whole purpose of bringing him in was the Germans in June of 1940 were already planning to go into Russia stupidly within a year, and they did not want to put a million people in occupied France. So they carved it in two. I'm not saying in two, but basically they bisected it. And they garrisoned with less than 100,000 troops. And then they gave the Vichy government at Vichy, the natural spring water town, little tiny resort town. And they said, you control France. And they did. And that was Petain's traitor, his treason.
Yeah,
he allowed the Germans to control the entire country of France with less than 100,000 occupation troops. If you think that there were millions of French people who went up in the foothills with, grease guns and were fighting and killing thousands of Germans, that's not true. There was a very small resistance, at least until 1944.
I must say I'm ignorant about many things, but Vichy was essential to the invasion of Russia. Just Didn't dawn on me till this moment. Oh, wow.
Yeah. They contrast that with Norway. Norway was not nearly as strategically important.
Right.
Before they went into France, they had a hard time months earlier in Norway. The Germans did. In fact, the British almost were able to stop them. It didn't pan out too well because they thought it would be a base. So when they bombed Britain during the Blitz, say from July 1940 to March of 41, they thought bombers would come from occupied France, you know, the 40 miles across the channel, and then they could have other ones coming from Norway. But they found out very quickly that it was too far from Norway. It was too cloudy. The weather was inclement. And there was no value, is what I'm saying, in Norway. Right. And it wasn't going to be neutral like Sweden that collaborated. It was resistant. And so they had to put, you know, two divisions there. They really did 30, 40,000 people the whole war, and it got higher. And so people complained about Hitler, but he didn't. They had a Quisling government that helped. But France was the big problem, and they were brilliant in the way that they had propaganda. Right. And they occupied it with very few troops, and that allowed them to free up everybody. Had we been prepared for World War II, and we weren't, we didn't have the landing craft, we didn't have the aircraft, we didn't have the ship built. But if we had rearmed in 1935, when he went into Russia and put 3.5 million troops, the largest invasion in history, on June 22nd, we could have gone into D-Day and gone all the way to Berlin. There was nobody there. But that wasn't to be. We weren't ready. We had to go around the periphery first and learn how to do it.
Right. Well, you know, all this Pétain's act of treachery took place a little more than a decade before France had another great capitulation or embarrassment in Vietnam. And this week is the 70th anniversary of the Dien Bien Phu battle. And we don't have time today, but I just want to state it and also state that coming up, you know, Victor's going to be away, and we're not going to not have shows while you're away. So I'll make a little pitch here. There'll be some evergreen topics. We'll pre-record some shows and your thoughts on that, you know, the Vietnam battle, and anything else the listeners would like to suggest. I have an email address, jackrslc@gmail.com. And if you want to send me your question to pose to Victor on these shows that we'll pre-record, please do that. Victor has a website, as I mentioned at the beginning. It's called The Blade of Perseus. Its address is victorhanson.com. And you should subscribe, because if you don't, you'll go there. Oh, this looks like a great piece by Victor. And you'll click on it, and it'll say ultra. It looks interesting, but you won't be able to read it because you need to subscribe. And Victor writes 3 pieces a week for ultra, exclusive. I calculate it's the on an annual basis, it's probably the equivalent of 2 books. So you should check that out. If you're a fan of Victor's writing, go there, subscribe. $5 gets you in the door, $50 discounted for the full year. Plus links to everything else Victor writes, his syndicated columns, American Greatness Weekly essays, his other appearances, archives for this podcast, victorhanson.com, The Blade of Perseus. As for me, Jack Fowler, I write Civil Thoughts, a free weekly email newsletter I do for the Center for Civil Society at AMFIL, where we are trying to strengthen civil society. And when you get Civil Thoughts, go to civilthoughts.com, sign up. It's free. Again, no, we're not renting names out to anybody. So it's just an act of goodness. You will get 14 recommended readings of excellent articles I've come across in the previous week. I'll give you the link to the article, and I'll give you an excerpt. So I know folks have enjoyed it, and I appreciate the kind.
We'll talk about Dien Bien Phu. I just want to finish with one little observation.
Sure.
You know, there was a good book written by a guy named Bice, I think, Frank Bice, about what happened to all the prisoners on the Eastern Front, both German and Russian, etc. And he made the point, I mean, they were captured at Stalingrad in late 41 and 42, excuse me, 42 and 42, early 43.
November. We're talking about from all nations, not just Germans. We're talking about
yes, but the German, the Sixth Army, that collapsed and surrendered in February of 43,
right?
For 5 months. So what happened to all those? There was 100,000. Most of them died. There was about 15,000 they took to Germany. I mean, to Moscow. They worked them to death. But in 1953, they wanted to open up to new West German relations and kind of co-opt it.
Right.
And Konrad Adenauer is a good guy. So he went to the Soviet Union. He brought back, I think by 1953, he brought back about 10,000 of them. These were German soldiers. The rest of them, and then they kept, I don't know how many they kept, 7,000 or 8,000 that were SS. And those guys actually came back in the 1980s. But my point is this, some of the guys that were captured or after the war was over, they had been SS troops and they had been deployed in France.
Right.
Were captured and not let go.
By the French. So the French have these guys in there.
Yeah, the French had these guys and they gave them a choice of being executed or going into Vietnam and fighting with the French Foreign Legion. And they fought very well, and almost all of them were killed at Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah.
The people who surrendered, I think 10,000 surrendered, they only got back about 2,000. They were completely, the whole thing is a disaster.
Well, when we have
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, ample time. That would be great to get your thoughts on that.
Americans tried the same thing with Da Nang, and they put an isolated post out on a flat plain surrounded by mountains. And they enticed the North Vietnamese to say, oh boy, another Dien Bien Phu. But the point was that the French had almost no air support.
Right.
Just a few planes. The Americans had B-52s and they put it in a grid. And so they deliberately sat there and the Vietnamese came and each squadron was given sections and they just completely pulverized for miles around. They killed thousands of North Vietnamese and then they left. That was it. It was right near the DMZ. They just left. All of this, everybody should, he's coming to the Hoover next week. Mark Moyer, he has a 3-volume history, of which the second volume is out on Vietnam. And it's not your regular Vietnam history. It's the United States was winning. It could have won. It gave up for a variety of reasons. And they were not military efficacy. They fought very well. And William Westmoreland was not an idiot, as everybody says. Yeah. But it's a revisionist history, and I think you'd all enjoy reading at least the first 2 volumes. And he has a lot about Da Nang, and the first volume talks about Dien Bien Phu, so it's a good thing to read.
Well, Victor, as we do at the end of the podcast, I find a comment or two to share. By the way, I listened to the last podcast you did with Sammy, Sammy's just the loveliest soul. She purposely put up a comment where someone said something nice about me. It was very kind of her. But this one is from iTunes/Apple. And it's written by, it's called Canada Calling. He titles his comment, by the way, you can rate the show there, 0 to 5 stars. It's got a 4.9 rating, thousands of people. Most everyone's giving Victor 5 stars. I'd give him more, but 5 is the limit. Anyway, Canada Calling, quote, "This show is fantastic. Krauthammer was one of the best, but VDH is the greatest. Up Canada, we don't really have a conservative media, let alone a conservative thinker we can listen to. People need to understand both. Our countries are going through the same issues. If the left is successful in their agenda, then the world as we know it is over. VDH brings his knowledge of ancient societies to the forefront for us. We must understand history to survive. Thank you, exclamation point. And signed by disappointed chubby guy. So, which is an interesting self-identification. But thanks, disappointed chubby guy. We appreciate that. And everyone else who submits comments.
Oh, a last end note. We were talking about, I was just thinking about this.
Yeah.
The State of the Union started 20 minutes late. Did you know that, Jack? 20 minutes late.
For good reason, right?
Yes. Now, why did it start 20 minutes late? We're going to end on this.
It was a pro-life rally, wasn't it? No.
Pro-Hamas rally.
Yes.
Yes, pro-Hamas rally, and they were saying kill Jews and the regular stuff. Mm-hmm. But in other words, Jack, they were disrupting an official government proceeding at the Capitol.
Yeah.
So...
sounds like an insurrection to me.
Exactly. It was an insurrectionary act that suspended the government business for the whole nation. So I'm expecting that they arrested at least 50, 60, 80, 100 of those people, put them in solitary, have not charged them since, and they will be looking at 10-year prison sentence. Many of them are not U.S. citizens. Is that going to happen?
I don't know. No. Victor, I think you have a better chance of winning Mega Millions or Powerball than that happening. So, Victor, you've been terrific today. Thanks for all the wisdom you shared. Thanks, folks, for listening. Do come back, especially if you're new. We appreciate it. And if you want to listen to old episodes, go to victorhanson.com. You'll find the archives. Thanks very much. We'll be back soon again with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.